Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the Star Chamber Show, episode number 175, so a bit of a milestone tonight. This is Steven Zimmer, and thank you to Pete Fry for the great intro music. Pete's currently on vacation in California in a real beautiful spot, so hoping he's having a great time this week and tonight. I am joined by not one, but two, but not two, but three co-hosts tonight, because we had a bit of a family tragedy situation, so Holly will not be on tonight. I'm actually broadcasting from Indiana, and joining me first from Tennessee, the one and only Daniel Dark. From my bluegrass state of Kentucky, we have Rebecca Westerman, and from Knoxville,
hello,
Tennessee, I think we have him on the line now, Thomas Moore. So, greetings,
everybody. Hello.
How's everybody doing tonight? I'm getting a little bit of feedback.
Somebody's
got their volume up a little on their
on their show.
Let's
we might be getting a little bit on that. But welcome to the show and first time co-hosting for Rebecca and Thomas. So this is going to be a fun night, and wow, we have one heck of a guest coming up, and so that's going to add to the fun. And let's go around, because we always like to see what's going on in our co-host lives for the past week. Mine, as you can probably guess, has been a bit crazy, a bit tumultuous, so we'll skip over me and go straight to Daniel.
Mine has been very ineffective. I've been sick in bed the first two days of this week, so.
Oh, dear.
But, you know, we're back up and rolling again today, so.
Yeah, you sound good, so, that's good news.
I don't let a little thing like sickness bother me any, just couldn't get too far away from the house,
Right. And
the thing that I've got that I'm excited about right now is the 10th down at Sam Davis home. I will be cooking some of my ketchup and having cookbooks and other books there for people to buy and have signed and stuff like that, doing a signing and an actual cooking demonstration.
Oh, man.
At one of the president's
homes.
Awesome. So.
That is cool. That's cool. Maybe Thomas can come up and catch that, since he's not too far from you. But, oh, man, that is cool. Yeah, I'm hoping to actually catch Rob Hoff this Friday in Indiana at Switzerland Community Art Center. He's actually doing his first signing for Serpent Egg Rapture. So I'm not appearing, but I'm hoping to go and give support to the amazing Rob Hoff there. So yeah, we do have some cool events coming up in the area. So let's go to Rebecca and Thomas. Thomas is a great filmmaker and screenwriter. Rebecca is a YouTuber and also a great author. And so let's go to them and let them both also tell you a little bit about themselves, just in case you haven't gotten to meet them yet. So we'll go Rebecca first. Go ahead.
Okay. Hi. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes,
oh,
ma'am.
Oh, yeah. You hear you. Fantastic.
All right. Awesome. And please forgive me. I have cars driving by my window, and I have my window open, and I don't want to close it because it's super hot here.
Yeah.
So... So if you
not
hear
I'm sitting outside
going
with the dogs and the cars and the airplanes, so don't worry about it.
Okay. Let's see. What was the question? What I'm working on?
Oh, just introduce yourself.
Tell us a little bit about the life of Rebecca and who you are and stuff.
Well,
and your ASMR goodness and your writing. Yeah, all that good stuff.
Yes, ASMR. I can do my whole introduction whispered if you want.
Yeah.
No, I do an ASMR channel on YouTube. It is called Spooky Tingles ASMR. And that is what that is. Well, we could do a whole show on that alone. So just Google it if you don't know what it is. but that is in addition to, I'm working on the sequel right now to Rising Ash. It is called Falling Embers, and I'm hoping to have it launch in time for Imaginarium in October.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Now,
yep.
Say,
and that's on top of full-time ghostwriting and
Sookie
parenting
Tinkle?
And stuff. Yeah. Do what?
Did you say your podcast or whatever their YouTube is Sookie Tinkle?
I like that. I might start a second channel for that. No, it's Spooky Tingles.
Oh,
Spooky
Tingles.
Tingles.
I'll get an oriental, you know. You know.
I didn't know this was going to be
that's
that
awesome.
Kind of party.
No, that's cool. I know Holly
yeah.
loves your channel, though. And she is an ASMR addict, so she's a connoisseur of this sort of thing. So I know she
awesome.
Speaks well of your
yeah.
channel. Yeah.
Very cool.
Well, she told me about
that
it.
That is awesome. Yep. Yep.
It sounds like something that I would
sure
like after I know what the name actually is. So.
Well, you ever watch like Bob Ross or something like that? You know the sound of like brushes on the canvas and stuff like that. That's what evokes ASMR. So it's little bitty soft, like whispery sounds. And a lot of people get like a tingling sensation from that. And that's what ASMR is.
Okay.
Spooky tingles. That's right.
Yeah.
There you
yeah.
go.
It's
gotcha.
Fun.
And,
it's a lot of fun.
Mr. Moore, now it's your turn to brag about yourself a little bit here, Mr. Screenwriter, Filmmaker, and Festival Director.
I don't brag, man. Everyone seems to do it for me. I just kind of sit back. Where's Nathan? I need my hype. No.
Well, you got to
say
a little bit.
All right. We just, you know, filmmaker, writer, film festival director. Anything to push you up for? We just wrapped last weekend, like part one of four. We're creating a really big project right now. And we wrapped the first part last weekend, real busy weekend. Taking this weekend to write and prepare for the following weekend and the following weekend after that. And then I get another week off and then go for two more weeks back-to-back again for filming. So just staying busy, guys, watching these films.
Very cool.
In the film festival.
Southern Oasis Film Festival, if you're keeping score, folks.
Yes.
Filmfreeway.com, filmfreeway.com, Southern Oasis Film Festival is where you can find this awesome festival that Thomas has spearheaded down in the great state of Tennessee in Knoxville.
Much appreciated.
So check that out.
Yeah,
check that out
about,
for sure.
I started it last year in like October or something, and it was going on in February, and I received like 80 submissions during that time. And we're not even close to where I began last year. And I'm already at almost 40. So can't complain too much.
That's awesome. It's always an ebb and flow, but yeah, I'm sure you're going to do very well this year, especially with having a year under your belt there. The word is out.
Yeah, we sold out last year. Like our venue is only about 100 seats and we sold out the entire thing by the end of the day.
Oh, that's awesome. That is
cool.
Awesome. All right.
What are the dates
well,
for that,
I'll tell you what, let's,
Thomas?
Oh, yes, dates. That's a good question there.
The festival itself plays, right now it's slated to just be February 8th.
Okay.
There's some talk about maybe doing something on the 7th and the 9th as well, but we'll see right now.
Okay.
Concrete, for sure, February 8th, 2020.
Okay, cool. So that's
very
next
cool.
year.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, it's like I chose it during the slow time because there's no one's really going on during that time and everyone's kind of bored from the holidays. Like, let's do something.
yeah.
It's like
yeah,
one
February,
of them that I found
yeah.
today and I posted something about it. It's happening over here in Franklin, Tennessee. And it's a film festival type. And it's the middle of October. like nothing else is going on in the middle of October.
Shoot.
My October's super busy.
Nothing.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, mine is destroyed.
Nothing, Daniel.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I thought we were going to see each other in October, but I guess not. I don't know.
Well, plus it takes at least 30 days to prep for Halloween, so, you know.
Right. I agree.
That's a full-time commitment right there.
Oh, man. That's awesome.
So it's like my mom. She's moving from where she's living at now to back to where she was living at before. She's doing that the second weekend or the second week of October.
She's just being extra. We don't have time for that.
Guess what else is happening that weekend and everything?
I don't know. What's going on that weekend, Daniel? Tell me.
Let me check my calendar.
There's a little thing called Imaginarium that's going to be going on.
Yeah,
man, I've heard that, please.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Oh,
and I'm like, yo, Mom, pick another day. No Wednesdays, any other day during the month of October. I will try to help you out.
Like, drive people down to her house and call it a scene change workshop and just have them load all the furniture and then unload it at the new house. It'll be like hands-on experience.
Hey, that's not
why
a bad
is she
idea.
Not in marketing?
Yeah, I'm writing that down. That is awesome.
Yeah. They'll be like, what does this have to do with the entertainment industry? Do as you're told, Blackie.
Yeah. And that is awesome. I've got to think like Rebecca. I need to think like Rebecca. I can make all, get all the help in the world and make it sound really fancy.
Yep.
Just stand out there with your camera, Steve. And just stand out there with your camera and everything like you're filming it. And everything, and this has to go off right and everything. Get it on the truck, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, you know.
Right. Hey, that'd help me out. I
can film festival. Get it done right.
That's a good way of getting out of carrying anything. That's fantastic. I'm loving it. That's a good idea. I'm going to go for that. But before we get too deep into the show tonight, everybody, because we got a couple minutes before we bring our guest on, I do want to acknowledge our sponsors this week. We have two. Ren Garcia, League of Elders series, fantastic author. He does have one of his books on audio for free in sections on the Ren Garcia YouTube channel. So check that out. Good way to sample his work and check out his stuff. And here's a little bit about Ren.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
That's awesome. Yeah, I love hearing Ren's voice. He's great guy, and definitely meet him. You can meet him at Imaginarium, as a matter of fact. And you can also meet the next sponsor for tonight, Sandy Lender at Imaginarium. Here's a little bit about her. Fantasy author Sandy Lender has stories for everyone, especially for readers who like dragons. Realms of Fantasy magazine positively reviewed her dragon-packed novel, Choices Meant for Kings, upon its release. TheTimelessTeams.com went nuts for the critters in her Dragons in Space series. She's got 10 books available on Amazon so far, and she's not stopping. Check out the author page for Sandy Lender on Amazon.com to pick up a new favorite story. So, yeah, check out Sandy Lender. Great author. I've read her work. Definitely can vouch for that. And thank you for sponsoring the Star Chamber show. So, all right, back to the mayhem with Thomas and the gang here. So we're gonna get our guest on here in just a minute or two. So we just gotta make sure to get him called in just right here. I'm checking here.
I mean, Rebecca might be there in all fairness.
Do what
that
now?
Might be him, as a matter of fact. I think he just called, might have just called in here. So right now I am going to bring aboard a fantastic guest, which I've been looking forward to having on the show since he is actually from my area here, in central Kentucky, and he's an American guitarist, music instructor, producer, and a music entrepreneur, and he's worked as a solo performer, band leader with so many great artists in all kinds of genres. I mean, we're talking like J.D. Crow, the bluegrass legend. We're talking about Miles Osland, the jazz great. We're talking about rockers like Big Bad Voodoo Daddy and all kinds of folks. And then he's also has an interview series where he's interviewed some great guitar players, and I asked him about this too, where he's actually interviewed guitar masters like Steve Morse, Steve Lukather, George Lynch, Phil Keaggy, Billy Sheehan, and he's the founder of the SDML Academy of Guitar and the SDML System, and nationally recognized by the Gibson Foundation and YMCA USA. So, I mean, he's just got all kinds of stuff that he's going to be talking about tonight with us. And, of course, I'm speaking of David M. McLean, and I believe you are on the line, David. Are you there?
I am on the line, brother.
Yes, you are.
Fantastic.
Very good.
You are. And as a fellow Central Kentuckian now, I know you're not originally from Central Kentucky, and I was actually born in Denver, but we both are from the same place. I'm very excited to have you on the show, and I couldn't speak more highly of the work you do in our area with the Lexington Music Awards and LexiFest concert series. So very appreciative of that. But, man, we have a lot of area to cover because you are prolific, and you've got your hands in a lot of pies. I mean, it's
well,
you stay busy, don't you?
That's just because I'm an old guy, so I've had plenty of time to do all that.
Oh, man. I mean, I was reading through. I mean, I happen to be partial to the hard rock and metal world, so, I mean, when I was reading that, you know, you'd been interviewing guys like George Lynch and Billy Sheehan and Steve Stevens, I was like, whoa, you know. Of course, I love, you know, J.D. Crow and all the other artists that you've been on stage with and worked with. But, I mean, I was like, wow. I think that's awesome because, I mean, you have – I mean, right from the get-go and just reading your work, I mean, you have a very comprehensive kind of multi-genre kind of approach. And we love that here at the Star Chamber Show. I mean, we love the folks that really do have a respect for all types because, I mean, I'm – you know, as a fantasy author, I've encountered, you know, snobbery sometimes from – literary types that don't think highly of the fantasy genre, and so it's really
fantasy.
Cool to have a guy. Yeah,
fantasy. Right, I'm out of here. Click.
Yeah. But it's cool to have a guy of your caliber that actually, you know, does work with the full spectrum and clearly respects it. I mean, that is it's awesome. So kudos to you. And
it's just a blast, man. As a writer, I mean, you get in. And, you know, when you first start and you're young, you know, whatever you're digging is like the only thing and everything else sucks. But as you get older, you know, and you start doing a deep dive on everything before you know it, man, you're just like, man, writing is awesome. Books are awesome. How can, you know, and it's
right.
The same thing with music. I mean, you have your preferences initially. But before you know it, you start having this huge respect for them because you get placed in situations and you can either sink or swim, you know. I mean, I had a buddy years ago, got a great recording engineer named Les Campbell, who just recorded so many people. Yeah, you know, Les, yeah. Well, I remember having a really great talk with him. We were sitting in the studio one day, and he just said, man, you know, if you can't get into the headspace, like whatever the project is you're working on, it's the best thing in the world. Like, it's better than anything. And if you can't get in that headspace, then you can't provide any real meaningful suggestions as to, you know, you can't bring your creativity fully on board. You're not doing your job, whether you're there as an engineer or a producer or a guitar player or whatever. And that really opened my mind and opened my ears. And I had already been doing other gigs. I mean, I had an appreciation outside of the stuff I was normally playing, but I tell you what, that really just blew the doors off of it, you know, where you just go ahead and sink as deep as you can into whatever that project is, and you got to get in the artist, you know, the other artist's headspace and like adopt all their aesthetics so that you know what's happening and that you can really bring meaningful dialogue and meaningful ideas to the table, you know, because he's right. If you don't, you're not doing your job. And at that point, I almost immediately, almost overnight, had this just massive, much deeper appreciation for things than I've ever had before.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah,
and,
Les is the man, man. Les is awesome.
No, he's got an ear. Yeah, he's a great, great studio guy. Definitely, definitely. And, well, I there's so many areas we can start with, but maybe you could let people know about your Skinny Devil Music Lab, because that's the kind of like the overarching entity under which you do all these kinds of activities, from performance to teaching to everything. So,
yes, Skinny Devil Music Lab. Well, I know we should leap right into that, but I'm going to forget a story for you if I don't tell you the story
go ahead.
First.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you mind if I deviate? I know, man.
No,
I know
not
I'm
at
horrible.
All.
Well, because you mentioned George Lynch and whatnot, I just wanted to say I was playing. This was a couple of years ago. And I was down at Third Sky Studio, Richard Easterling, you know, man on the board. And it was on a project that Gregory Francis was working on. And so I go in and I've got my guitars and whatnot. But he shows me this amplifier that had belonged to Ace Frehley. And then he brings out these guitars,
man.
That had belonged to George Lynch. And he'd autographed them and the whole nine yards. So I, on Gregory's project, which you need to hear, man, it's just like everything he's done is amazing. Gregory mm-hmm. Francis is his name. And so on the project, I don't remember which songs it was, because I played on a bunch of different songs that he's done. Just amazing, brilliant artist. But I played a George Lynch guitar through an Ace Frehley amp.
Oh, wow.
And that was all captured
wow.
at Third Sky with Richard manning the board. It was just amazing. It was a great experience. So I've got some pictures. I should have sent those along and whatnot beforehand. But yeah, that was one of those bucket lists, you know, get to check that one right off. So
Steven?
Now I'm going to have to look up my picture from when I was 7 years old and my mom made me the Ace Frehley costume from the Kiss Alive 2 period, and I'm going to have to send that to David so he can see what an Ace Frehley
there
fan
you go,
I was
man.
In the early days. And
hey, if you're
I
George
want to see
Lynch,
that picture.
Yeah. Yeah, man. If you're a Kiss fan, in addition to that Ace Frehley amp, the same guy, Houston Barger, owned a guitar that was Paul Stanley's prototype for the Iceman. That he went out on
nice.
Tour with. So the year before he played the prototype. So he that prototype I also played. I didn't record with that one, but I also played that guitar through that
beautiful.
Amp too, through
wow.
through Ace's amp.
Yeah.
So that was pretty badass, man. I got a lot of bucket list things I can check off.
Yeah, and a shout out to George Lynch, his band The End Machine project with two of the other docking guys and Robert Mason on vocals. Great rock. Melodic hard rock record that's out just now. It's a newer one, but yeah, he's such an amazing guitar player. Yeah,
I've
so
not
many,
heard
so
that
many,
yet.
Yeah, and the new KXM I think is coming up, and the bass player for King's X and the drummer for Korn, the project he has
from
with them
Korn,
is
yeah.
coming up in I think September. So, but he stays busy.
Yeah.
He stays so busy.
Yeah, I had done a review of that first album that he did with them, and then that I think that's about the time I interviewed George, who's a great guy, by the way. That guy's just—he's so amazing.
Yeah.
He's as awesome a guy as he is a player.
Oh, that's awesome! But I know the gang wants
well,
to talk to you. I don't want to hog
into
too
a
much,
different
but...
genre. Steven said something about Big Bad Voodoo Daddy.
Yeah,
Big Bad Voodoo Daddy.
Yeah,
I
were
have
a blast.
About. I have about most of their albums, so, you know. Is there any of them that you are on?
No. I didn't play for the band. I got to share the stage with them. I was playing for another artist at the same show, so we were all on the same. And their keyboard guy sent me cool pictures that he took, and I'm pretty sure one of those is up on Facebook and maybe on the website and that kind of stuff. So that was a blast. I when I when I play sort of, you know, upscale kind of gigs, I've got these great, like these great black wingtips that I wear that are just like really cool shoes. And I walked in and like everyone in that band, their shoes were like twice as good as mine. I was like, man, it's just depressing. And they're like, yeah, we know. Those guys have amazing shoes on top of their amazing clothes, but great bunch of guys, by the way. Just, they were super friendly and super fun to work with. And just really personable and amazing. Watching those guys just do a sound check is they should video a sound check and just put it up so that like bands learn how to rehearse and sound check efficiently. It was amazing watching those guys work.
Wow,
that's cool. Well, Rebecca, Thomas, do you have anything to jump in with, or I got a lot?
Yeah, I got a question.
Fire away.
So I'm trying to figure out how to word this. Like, as a creative, when we were starting out, like we were in our young 20s and, you know, et cetera, at least for me, my experience was that everyone said, you know, make sure you have a backup plan, make sure you, you know, have a day job and yada, yada, yada. Like, how did you, like, step into having a career in your creative art? Like, as a musician, like, at what point in your life did you realize, like, this is what I'm doing, this is how I'm going to make money and pay my bills?
Great question. And I should preface my answer with the fact that I'm far less risk-averse than the average person. So I don't necessarily think everybody should do what I'm about to tell you. I think maybe a backup plan is not necessarily a bad idea. Problem is the problem with the normal thought on it. I mean, let's say you're a parent and you're telling your child, I mean, you want the best for your child. You want them to be safe. You want them to be secure. And so I get it. I've got kids and grandkids. I mean, I totally get where they're coming from. That said, if you have your backup plan to work whatever job while you're working on your music and you're devoting 40 hours a week to your job and 40 hours a week on that, and you got to have a little bit of downtime because you got to get back in that creative headspace. So, and then you've got, you know, you've got to actually do the stuff with the money that you're making, like pay the bills and buy the food and clean the house. And what happens is you spend 40 hours a week working. And if you're lucky, you get 2 hours a week doing plan A. So your plan B, you can call it plan B all day, but your plan B is your plan A. And your plan A is really your plan B. And that's the reality. So I simply like jumped ship. and I'm not saying I didn't ever work other jobs, but what I'm, what I am saying is that I had to keep firmly in mind this is to get me here and I don't mind starving, you know? So, and again, that's not going to make any parent happy when they're talking to their child, because they don't want their child to starve and they don't want their child to sleep in their car and they don't want their child to, and again, I'm a parent and I'm a grandparent. I get that. Like, you know, but nobody would say that. If you said, I want to be a doctor, they wouldn't go, well, you know, you might want to get an accounting degree just in case that doctor thing doesn't work out. And again, I get why. There's a very clear path. There is a single path to being a doctor. And if you deviate from that path, you go to jail for practicing without a license. You know, there's a very clear path to being an attorney. If you try to be an attorney, you go to jail without, you know, for practicing without a license. You didn't pass the bar. You didn't go to, you know. So there's a very clear path, whereas in the arts in general, not even music, in anything in the arts, there is not a clear path. But having said that, if one person can do it, another can do it. There are things to maximize your ability to do what it is you want to do. And a lot of it comes down to, how do I monetize the thing that I want to do, as opposed to how do I, you know, the artist kind of thing is always, do I make concessions in what I'm doing to make it more, market viable? And I think the reality is Frank Zappa, sticking with a music example, I think Frank Zappa proved to us that you don't need to worry about market viability. You need to worry about doing quality work and then getting out there so that your potential market can find you. And in the literary world, I don't know if I'm getting too far esoteric with someone like, say, Robert Anton Wilson. Mm-hmm. He's a clear example of that. I mean, he doesn't fit into any particular genre in any way that that would be easily marketable. He just did quality work, and then did the marketing side as a separate issue. You dig and you until you get traction and you make it work. No one said it was going to be easy, but then being a doctor or lawyer is not mm-hmm. easy either. Doing landscaping isn't easy. Their jobs aren't easy. No one's doing it because it's easy. So that's my two cents. But having said that, again, I'm less risk averse. I'll jump off the cliff and then figure out how to build a parachute on the way down. And that's not necessarily everybody's modus operandi. So,
you have done is you built a number of streams, though. I mean, when I look at your body of activity, I mean, you're a performer, you're in the studio, you teach. I mean, you're involved in multiple different spheres of, so how does, how did you end up balancing all those different spheres out? Like, what's a typical week or month for David McLean when it comes to, teaching versus live performance versus studio? How do you manage all those different things together?
I don't. There's no balance at all, and it's chaos. And it only looks like I know what the hell I'm doing, like from the other side of the lens. I teach 3 to 4 days a week. I do private lessons. I do group lessons. We built a guitar system years ago that ended up getting backing from the Gibson Foundation and became the model for the YMCA of the USA for any guitar classes they would do across the country. We became the model for that. And at that point...
And that's SDML Academy, right? SDML Academy?
Yes. And at that time, we got... I was lucky enough to get J.D. Wright and Pauly Felice on board. And we spent a couple of years just shoulder to the wheel, seeing what would work, seeing what didn't work, experimenting wildly. And now Pauly has taken over as the program director and sort of head of the – he's like running the academy now, basically. If you go and look at sdmlguitar.com, that's really his creation, and he has just done incredible work putting everything so that we can expand the system. And at the risk of sounding like, blowing our own horn, basically we've cut the timeline for learning to a level of competency in half of what most other systems would do. That certainly wasn't just me. I mean, I had shaved some time off, where we really hit, and became just hyper efficient was actually after we got the national recognition. When Pauly and JD came on board, and they've both done incredible work, and then Pauly and now organizing it to bring it to a larger audience, just incredible stuff. But having said that, yes, I teach 3 to 4 days a week, private and group classes, and I perform sporadically. I've got like a monthly thing, and I may have a weekly thing coming up, and then I do one offs when the phone rings. I do that's the same way I do studio work. I do session work. Someone needs a guitar or a bass or something on or production. Somebody says, "Well, I heard this thing that you produced. Would you produce us?" So I end up in the studio either as a producer or as a guitar player, basically. And those are sporadic too. There's no regularity to when an album's going to be made or what have you. And all the other hats that one wears as a professional musician, the idea is kind of you know, maybe the same thing in writing. I mean, I write, but not like you guys write. I mean, I just do interviews and you know, things of that nature. You know, but you, basically you kind of look at the music industry and you say, how many of these things do I love? How many of these do I not love? Because I'm not really going to do anything that I don't love to do. And the main reason is because there are better ways to make money than music. So if it was just a money thing, you know, then I'd do something else. But so then you look at the things you love and you say, which of these things can I monetize? and which of these can't I monetize, but I want to do anyway. And then how do I make one of these other things pay for the thing that, that I want to do anyway? And then you just run with it. So, there's a lot of typical week. I mean, it changes from week to week. The only thing steady really is probably the teaching. Everything else is just, you know, it's a crapshoot on any given week. You know, there might be nothing going on one week, and the next week there's live shows, and it might be a local show. It might be, you know, national TV. It might be, you know, who knows? It could be any number of things.
Well, being that
so what he's basically telling you, Stephen, is that it gets better as soon as you die.
Yeah, that's what I want.
No, man, I'm having a blast, brother. I'm having a blast. It's you know, but it's not stable. You know, it's certainly not for everyone. It's not stable. It's not orderly. It's chaotic. You know, I've got a couple divorces behind me, and you know, it's not easy on anyone around you. That's for damn sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, being in a group of creatives, and obviously I think I speak for each of us, is like the internet has opened so many doors. And so I guess like on the music side, would you say that today, do you think it's easier for people to get into music or find recognition in music? Or do you think it was easier 15 years ago?
You know, I don't even bother with that, to be quite honest. I mean, if I were a music historian, and I love music history, don't get me wrong, but if I was a music historian, I'd probably spend a lot more time analyzing that. Or if I was running a giant record label, I'd be in a blind panic, I'm sure. But the reality is that musicians always did what they did. You know, they would perform, and sometimes they would perform, you know, let's say the house band scenario, or they might be an itinerant musician where they're going from town to town. You know, like the old, you know, flamenco guys, you know, gypsy guys playing here and there, or Robert Johnson and the other blues guys kind of, you know, moving around or what have you. And then recording technology showed up, you know, and it changed the landscape in a fairly radical way, but you know, the reality is like who was making money when they did that? You know, if you've seen Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, that was the model.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, I'm going to pay you to do your song, and you're not going to make any money on the sales because I'm the one taking the financial risk. You know, but if it pays off and I make a bunch of money, you're going to have the leverage then to go make more money when you play these shows because people are going to want to hear you. And there's nothing particularly wrong with that model. I mean, I'm sure there were lots of complaints on both sides. You know, these guys think they need money and I'm taking all the risk, and the other side's like, he's making all this money on me. And yeah, you know, but the reality was it was a fairly functional model. Was it perfect? Of course not. But, and then later the model changed, and what happened is suddenly, you know, the label, you get these larger labels and they're writing contracts and giving you money that you're really having to pay back.
Right. Yeah.
And so, And you know, and then suddenly, you know, you get to Napster and all that, and the labels start going under, the model's changing again. But really the thing is, what's the consistent thread through all that? And the answer to that is musicians doing what musicians do, which is creating and performing quality music and performing it as often as possible in front of many as people as possible. And if you're willing to do that, you're going to find that you have a career. It probably will not look like a career that you have in your head, because we have in our head what we had when we were kids and we got that dream, but the landscape always changes, you know, so it's likely not going to look like the dream we have in our head. But that's kind of the difference between having a hard concrete dream and having a very fluid, like a surfer on a wave kind of dream. You know, if you keep your mind and your expectations fluid, then you're smiling all the time instead of bitching about what isn't. You know what I mean? Because I'm lucky as hell I get to do this. You know, that's I wake up every day going, damn, this is awesome. You know, I mean, if I got bogged down on worrying about that it isn't what it was yesterday, then, you know, I'd be flipping burgers because that's about all I'm qualified to do other than play guitar. You know what I mean? I don't want to be depressed about. I'll leave that to somebody else. There's plenty of people depressed about the way the industry's working. I don't care. I mean, go be depressed. I don't have time for that. I'm having fun and I'm trying to be creative and trying to help other people and boost other artists up and promote them and just do what I do. So, you know, models always change. You know, there's no reason to hang on to, you know, just you got to let go. Just let go and keep moving.
You mean you can't just once and everybody comes flocking to your door?
What's that now?
You can't just record a song once and everybody just comes flocking to your door? Is that?
Yeah, well, you know, it never really worked that way. You know, it never did work that way. I mean, you know, even in the book world, you look at, you know, who gets the big advances? Well, it was someone who was already famous, you know. You know, I remember when Dick Cheney got out of office, you know, and you know, got that giant book deal, and it's like, and I remember there being this uproar about how these people who had been writing for years and just, you know, couldn't get traction, and then he just shows up and, you know, gets $15 million to write a book, and I'm like, he's vice president of the U.S., you know, the United States.
Yeah.
Like him or not, he's already ridiculously famous. Yeah, he's getting paid because they know it's going to make that much, you know.
Yeah,
so
that's how they work.
I just
want to
say, as a professional ghostwriter, I guarantee you, Dick Cheney did not write that book.
Oh no, I'm sure he didn't. Of course not.
No.
And hopefully, and we can all hope that his ghostwriter was damn well paid. I mean, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I certainly hope so because you know he didn't write it.
I've read many '80s hard rock star. Memoirs, and I guarantee you they didn't write those books. They're far too well written.
You know, I like playing the ghostwriter game, going into a bookstore.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You don't think Ozzy Osbourne wrote his own book?
No,
Ozzy
Osbourne can't even talk.
Probably, was a consultant
or
something.
I love Ozzy. Don't get me wrong. I love Ozzy, but the guy can barely put together a coherent sentence. You know, the ghostwriter had that. Like, I hope they paid his ghostwriter double because he had to go through all the stuttering and, you know, I'm off on another trailing off and, you know, man, I got to put this thing together. Yeah, I love Ozzy.
Well, some of those guys
don't
even remember the period. Some of those guys don't even remember large chunks of what they had written about.
Exactly.
Have a little more.
The ghostwriter had to go talk to somebody else to find out what happened.
Right, that's right. The ghostwriter did the research. That's why it was a good book.
Right.
Yeah, like reading a Motley Crue and Aerosmith. And we were so high. You were so high. You don't remember this.
Yeah.
The ghostwriter had to go research all this crap.
Yeah. Oh man, that's too funny. But it is true, and you are right. The models change. I mean, for the book side, I mean, we watched things change huge. You know, during in the ebook world, and you know, and kind of what's evolved in the emergence of audiobooks. I mean, there's been seismic shifts in publishing, and you know, and Thomas can talk about the film side. But yeah, there's, I mean, it's a crazy time. You're right. It does change regularly. So yeah, you kind of got to. I think that your advice about kind of being fluid is actually ideal for today's creative artists. I mean, you have to be fluid because it is dynamic. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think it probably always has been, quite frankly. You know, I think that mostly what happens is we get in our head, you know, the static model because it's easy to say, well, this is how it works. You know, I mean, it's like when you look at a guitar book on how to hold a guitar, they say, hold it like this. Well, there are 18 different ways to hold a damn guitar, you know, but the guy writing it has to say something, and the editor is not going to give him, endless latitude in talking about the myriad ways of holding the instrument. They're just like, dude, just tell him something.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so I think it's a,
right.
I think that's analogous to how people write about any industry. You know, is that they go, well, this is how it works, because they have to say something. So they sort of summarize and they leave out all the dirty details. But the devil is always in the details. And once you start looking at those, you're like, well, this guy's deal's nothing like this guy's deal. So how does that fit in with that whole idea? And it's like, yeah, I never did. You know, just, you know, so, yeah, fluid.
Yeah,
right,
fluid. That's good advice. But where did your path start? Because, I mean, you are so multifaceted now. Very, you know, like I said, you work with so many different genres. What was your spark when you started out? Who was the – what kind of music did you listen to when you began your path? And how did it evolve later? You know, how did it grow?
Wow, man, we could be here all day with that. So I'll try to summarize. Just to say something, and then we'll put it in stone, and then the next – when ask me, it'll be totally different. To oversimplify, my going back to, like, I grew up with a mom who had been a vocal. She went to a women's college on a vocal scholarship, and my dad was a horn player. I think he had a scholarship too. Then he went to the military instead. So I was raised listening to, like, on my mom's side, she would either have classical music playing or she'd have current popular music playing. And then my dad, when he would come home and do some office type work at home, and he would have jazz playing. But then if he was just sort of sitting back, he had, you know, like the country of the day, like Chris Christopherson, for example, and whatnot playing. And then I remember as a very small child, we were down in, I'm not even sure where it was. It was Alabama or Mississippi, someplace on the Gulf Coast. And I remember going out on a dock, and it was the first time I heard a guy live playing music. And it was this old blues guy. I have no idea who it was. Don't know the song he was playing. But I was just mesmerized. This is amazing. And like everything else fell away. And so my personal background, I started gravitating from that experience and from listening to everything that was playing in the house and my friends. I started gravitating towards more hard rock kind of stuff and blues based stuff. So I was listening to a lot of old blues and a lot of rock. Although I was hearing, you know, John Coltrane and Miles Davis coming out of my dad's room, and, you know, Bach and Beethoven and Mozart and whatnot coming from my mom, and, you know, plus, like I said, all the contemporary stuff. And so next thing I knew, I was playing in bands, and next thing I knew, I was, you know, I'm sitting in on a, you know, sitting in with a jazz guy and learning a bunch from him, and sitting in with a classical guy and learning much from him, and it never stops. Quite honestly, I mean, I'm influenced by everything I hear. Sometimes the influence is on what not to do if I don't particularly like something, but there's so much quality stuff out there, and there always has been. You know, it's just I'm always getting turned on to new stuff or rediscovering old stuff, hearing things and old things I'd never heard before. You know, and all the teaching, because I've got so many people, kids and adults, and they have such a wide variety of tastes. And, you know, at some point you're teaching them songs in addition to all the other things you're teaching them. And so that's across the spectrum too. So, because right now, I mean, just as we speak, my youngest student is 6 and my oldest student is in his late 70s.
Nice.
And so you can imagine when one of them says, I want to learn a song, you know, it's covering a wide range of temporally as well as stylistically.
So when you're sitting there listening to that old guy.
I'm sorry?
When you were sitting there listening to that old guy, was he sitting on the a dock in the bay or what?
Nah, yes. Yeah, well, actually, yes.
Watching the tide.
Watching the tide. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I never thought of it like that. All these years, I never thought of it like that. But yes, that was exactly it. I never really connected it to that, I think, because of the style of music he was playing was so radically. It was a dark, dark, like Delta, all acoustic blues, and it was dark, man. Like, you know, somewhere between, I don't know, Cold as the Ground and Hellhounds on My Trail, kind of dark. It was some dark shit. Mm. I'm sorry, I said, excuse my language.
Oh, you're fine.
Oh, you're okay. You're fine. No. And see, I was sitting here, David, and thinking, trying to learn Slayer's last album was that, so I wasn't too far off there.
Yeah. Hey, have you ever hear Linda Perry do Rain and Blood on piano and vocals?
No, I did not. I'm going to look this up immediately after the show.
Oh, my God. It was great. I'm not even sure you can find it anymore. Linda Perry's the one who wrote, like, Beautiful by Christina Aguilera and a bunch of other songs for Pink and
that's
a bunch of others.
That's right?
Yeah, exactly. And so she did a series on her website, and most of it got taken down. I don't think any of it's on her website anymore. But she did a thing when iPhones first came out where she would just use voice recorder. And she would sit down, like, no fancy, no nothing, no running through, you know, the million-dollar microphones. And she would just sit down at a piano or with her guitar, push voice recorder. And I think her she'll have to, like, scold me if I'm wrong on this. But if I recall, what she did is she said, I'm gonna give myself an hour to, like, if it's a new song and she didn't know it, she'd give herself an hour to learn it. And then she'd push record and first take it and then she stick it up on her website, like warts and all.
Wow.
And she did a piano and vocal, like, slowed down version of Rain and Blood. It was just insane.
Oh, that is awesome. Oh, I've got to find that now. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And if I got her process wrong, I mean, I'm sure she's not listening, but I'm sorry, Linda, if I got that wrong, so you can call me and correct me.
I was going to say, is there a sign-up list?
Scold me on Twitter. Or
oh, that's awesome.
Twitter
so,
war.
Rebecca, you
I was going to say, is there a sign-up list for volunteering as tribute to get scolded by Linda Perry?
Yeah. Well, I don't know, Linda, so I don't, but...
Okay. Thanks. Anyway... Well, I got a question for you. Talking about the large range of students that you have and people that you come across who are seeking, you know, musicianship or whatever the phrase is, have you ever had to sit anyone down and just say, you know what, this isn't for you? Or do you do that? Do you think anyone can be a singer or musician if they really want to? Or does there need to be like a core talent there?
So yes, I've heard of other people doing that, and I would never do that ever. I'm just gonna go out on a limb here, and everybody who disagrees with me is gonna say that guy is a jerk, because it's one of my hot buttons. Like, if I hear a music teacher tell someone they're just not cut out for such and such, that's just a lazy teacher. That's a lazy teacher right there. And it's just that. Now, I can't speak to other forms of art, but I can speak to music. I don't know if that same thing exists in writing or theater or painting. Mm-hmm. I don't know enough about those to speak with any authority on them, but I do know about music. And, you know, the reality is everyone has a sense of rhythm, for example. The fundamentals of music are melody and rhythm, and a sort of secondary fundamental would be harmony, but it doesn't exist without the melody, so we're going to set it aside. So you've got melody unless you're tone deaf, and you've got rhythm unless you can't do rhythm. But see, here's the trick is that you cannot walk if you don't have an internal sense of rhythm. That's just the way it works. the number of people who have what's called rhythmic amusia, which is the term for someone who has no sense of rhythm, it's an exceedingly small number. And to my knowledge, and any neuroscientist out there can correct me if I'm mistaken on this, although I got this from a neuroscientist, those are almost always the result of some sort of brain injury. Now, tonal amusia, that's the technical term for if someone is tone deaf, is also incredibly rare. And I actually knew a guy who had tonal amusia, but he realized when he finally got that he just wasn't hearing the difference between an A and a B and a, you know, or whatever, mm-hmm. he switched to playing drums, and he's a great drummer. So the thing
awesome.
With that is that if you have a sense of rhythm, if you don't have some brain injury, so putting that aside, if your brain is completely intact, then you have a sense of rhythm and you can hear pitch, then all it takes is a certain degree of ear training, and that's on the teacher. And if the teacher isn't willing to go there with you, then the teacher needs to be honest and say, teaching you is doable, but you're so far behind, it's too hard, and I don't want to do it. Just fess up and own it and say, I don't want to do it. Let me direct you to someone else who has the time or patience or whatever, because there's no sin in saying, I don't want to put the effort in because it's more than I want to put in. The problem is if you're just going to lie and dump that on the student's shoulders and then leave them mm-hmm. thinking that they're the one lacking, because they're not. Now, is it easier for some people to learn? Of course it's easier for some people to learn. Some people grow up in a musical household, or just, I mean, because if you grow up with music all through the house, you're going to be more acclimated to that than someone who grew up with no music at all. And so, yes, it's going to mm-hmm. be easier for some people than others. But telling someone that they just aren't cut out for it, that's on the teacher. That's not on the person trying to learn. And I imagine, I don't know, to go back to something like film or writing or theater, if you grew up having people read to you or you're reading all the time, my guess is you're going to have an easier time becoming a writer. I don't know that, again, but
no,
I would assume.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah.
It would seem to stand to reason that you're going to be more acclimated to the written word. And so that would be easier for you to do. Does it mean you're going to be a great writer? No, I'm sure there are many other things, and natural talent is one of them. But I'm a big believer that everybody has art in them, and that can be cultivated. And mm-hmm. if someone loves writing more than they love theater, then write, write, and don't let anyone tell you any different. And if you love music and you love to sing and everybody says you're a horrible singer, then call me and we'll work it out, because it's probably just an ear training thing.
Yeah.
You just need to learn, to get your pitch together, to get your rhythm tightened up and get your tonal quality where you want it to be. Don't let a lazy teacher tell you that you can't. So that's, again, I'm sure I just pissed off half the people in the world who teach, but.
well, let me ask you this. Did Bob Ross piss anybody off? And he was just as encouraging as you when it came to painting. Mm-hmm.
So
I don't know. I was always,
yeah.
That I don't know, because I was always high when I was watching Bob. So
it is refreshing to hear someone with so much experience offer that insight, though. Like, it is possible.
Yeah.
You can just keep trying. It's a refreshing glass of water. I mean, like, it's unreal to hear someone who's done as much as you have to say, it doesn't matter if someone tells you that you don't have it, it's because they're lazy. You got it. Just got to find it. I mean, it's truly incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I just think I really do. I think quite often we dump responsibility off so that we don't have to own it. And, in whatever it is. The reality is, if we accept responsibility for something that may not even be our responsibility, the advantage of that is then you're empowered to make a change. And if you say, well, it's not my fault, you what you did is you just made yourself powerless, whatever the scenario.
Yeah.
And I think that if in believing that every single person can do it, it makes me a better teacher, because then I'm going to work harder. You know, I remember the day that I was met with a scenario in teaching that I said, you know, this is one of those moments. This is one of those big moments. I'm either going to do this or I need to stop pretending I'm a teacher. I had an 86-year-old man who'd come in on oxygen and had had a stroke, and he couldn't control one side of his body very well. And he said to me, well, I want to learn to play guitar. And I said, okay, man, you know. And so, you know, we were chatting a little bit as we're looking at, you know, he's telling me, well, I can't breathe well, and, you know, I've got this and that, and, you know, and I can, this hand's not working. And so I just said at one point, I usually ask everybody at a certain point why they want to learn to play, you know, because I need to know what their goals are and whatnot. And he looked at me, and he paused a minute, and his eyes just, like, bored a hole in me, and he said, I'm 86 years old, I've had heart attacks and a stroke, and I'm going to die soon. And the reality is, I've always done everything in my life for everyone else. I had to leave high school because my dad died, and I had to get a job and help my mom. And then, you know, I got married and we had kids, and so I had to, you know, do this for them and this, you know, and on and on and on. And everything I did, I always made sure everyone else around me had what they had. And I never really did what I wanted to do. And I'm going to die soon, and I want to learn to play before I die. And I'm going, damn, that's like, that's
no pressure.
Wow. It's a huge, yeah, no pressure, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely.
And so, well, to answer,
well, came
give
to
you
the right
solution,
guy. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Like, what I thought at that moment was, because this guy's sitting there holding the guitar, and it is clear he can't play, and he's never going to play, right? Ever. It's not going to happen. He doesn't have control of his hands. He shakes on one side, and so it isn't going to happen. We're done, right? If I play by the rules. So what I did was I said, well, wait a minute. Give me your guitar a minute. I cut the strings off, and I restrung the guitar real quick, and I spun it around the other way and had him hold it left-handed, because with his other hand, he could make the chord shapes. His left hand was shaking horribly, but I got a pick in his hand, and once he started strumming, the shaking went away. The rhythm caused the shaking, and so I taught him like three chords so he could play some Johnny Cash, and he left with a smile, and I never saw him after about six lessons.
Aww.
And I assume that I never saw him again, quite frankly, because I assume he died. No one ever called me. You know, no one, I sent a message, but no one ever responded. So I don't know. But this was years ago. So I'm quite certain he's dead now, but it was one of those moments. And I recognized at that moment, if I say, this is just, I can't, there's nothing you can do, man, then this guy's going to die, and he's never going to have done what he wanted to do. And I'm gonna carry that around, wondering if there was something more I could do, because I decided to be powerless. Or I can totally take this on and say, if he fails, it's my fault. So I need to step up to the damn plate and be a man about this and do my job. What's that?
I said it's better to try than to wonder what if. I mean, let's be honest about it.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Just like, yeah. I mean, you guys are all artists. It's the same, and you're doing things like this radio show and the other, you know, and writing and film and all the things you do, because you feel compelled to do it. But from a logical perspective, it also, like you said, I mean, you don't want to be 86 on your deathbed wishing you'd done that damn radio show or written that book or tried to make that film, you know.
Right.
You want to go, shit, even if I failed, I did some shit anyway, you know, because it was cool. And in terms of failing, maybe it only failed in the financial arena, you know, by maybe what other people would judge. But was it quality work? Did I do what I set out to do in terms of the quality of the work itself? Maybe I failed to get it seen by the large number of people that I had hoped for. But that's a secondary issue. The primary issue is did I do the quality work? And to me, that's got to be number one, and everything else moves from there. Because even the best artists in history, the best painters, the best writers, the best musicians have works that people went, dude, that sucks, you know? Or think of all the, you know, the female classical composers in Europe who never got heard because they were female.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, did they do quality work? And the answer to that, of course, is yes, because many of them are being rediscovered now. And so we know they did quality work. Now, it didn't do their checkbooks any good, you know, you know, during their day. But, you know, so it's you know, someone may argue that that's of little consolation. But, you know, again, I would just point out that that's a financial discussion. That's not an artistic discussion. And so that's kind of where I stand on that, is that, you know, I'm all about the quality work first, and then concerning with how you monetize that, or if you're able to monetize it later.
Well, you said
you know, that's just my two cents, and that won't even... What's that now?
I have you said something earlier about somebody being tone deaf and everything. I don't know whether you've worked with this or not, but what would be easier to teach, somebody that's tone deaf or somebody that's deaf?
Or somebody that's deaf completely?
Yeah, because I've heard some amazing artists that are deaf.
Yeah. It would depend on what instrument you're talking about. There are several deaf drummers. Evelyn Glennie, I think her name is. I'm drawing a blank there, but I think that was her name, or is her name. And she's deaf, and she's an amazing percussionist. So a lot of that, I think, would have to do, because if you're listening through bone conduction, for example, that's harder to differentiate pitch with a degree of accuracy that your ear could. But it does not.
But I've heard
pianists
and guitarists and everything else.
Those would be totally deaf.
Those would be
more difficult, I suspect. But rhythmically, you know, I mean, you could have a monster rhythm player, you know, because they can feel it. You know, I mean, I don't mean feel like they're feeling it like emotionally. I mean, they can physically feel the beat if whatever you're playing is loud enough. That's I mean, I don't know what would be harder. I mean, I've taught people with a degree of hearing loss, and I've got a degree of hearing loss at this point in my career. I can't do mastering anymore because I've got tinnitus, and so I don't hear to the fine grain detail that is required for guys who do mastering. I don't think, I mean, obviously there are certain things that are going to get in someone's way of being successful, but that goes back to that fluid conversation. I mean, if you simply can't hear pitch, but you really want to be a piano player, then you're running into a little bit of a problem, because, you know, you're like, it's kind of like defying the laws of physics. You know, I'm not just going to magically hear pitch because I want to. I would need to find some way around that, you know, whether it's cochlear implant or, you know, whatever else. But you most certainly can still get the rhythm part of it. And then from there you go, okay, let's figure this out. You know, so tone deaf, or, you know, whether it's tonal amusia or rhythmic amusia, or whether they're completely deaf, I would just take a look at the student, ask them what their goals are, and then see what I could do to you know, step-by-step process of achieving that as best I could. And I would enlist a lot of help. You know, I would go to people who know far more than I know in several of those areas to see what else I might be able to do and bring to the table.
Fantastic.
When I was in high school, we had two different guys that, one of them was blind and the other one was deaf, and the blind guy played classical piano and the deaf guy played guitar. And
wow.
Yeah.
They did a concert, and you're like, okay, how is this happening?
Absolutely. But that's just so cool. No, it's cool to hear things like that. I love those stories. So tell me about you guys real quick. Now we've got a filmmaker and a couple writers in the room. What else do you guys do?
I'm a serial killer.
But we all need our hobbies.
He makes ketchup.
I make ketchup. And I was a Victorian chef, had a restaurant before I had a stroke and stuff, and couldn't run the restaurant anymore physically, because there's a lot of physical demand in a restaurant that my body doesn't hold up to. And the fact that I couldn't walk for about 2 years, that sort of slowed that down too.
Oh my goodness.
But I write a penny farthing, if you know what that is.
A what?
Penny farthing?
No, I don't. What is
that? High wheel bicycle.
Yeah, you've seen them. Like the late 1800s. Think about it. The real big high wheel.
Yeah,
bicycles.
The big, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
That was literally my first introduction to Daniel Dark, was watching him driving around the convention center
hall
on that bicycle.
you going to teach me to ride that thing?
If you want to learn how, I can teach you.
That would be
awesome. It is a commitment bike.
That would be awesome.
Once you jump on the top of it, you made a commitment. So,
I bet. Yeah, you commit to that or all the way or not at all. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll find your teaching skills, Daniel, now. It's your turn. Oh, man, that's good. And
I don't have any trouble teaching somebody. You know, it's just whether they really want to learn or not.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'd find out real quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you would.
It's like a guy that was a triathlete. He saw me out riding one day, and he had just come in. He had his $15,000 bicycle that he was riding around on, that he just come in off like a 125-mile ride. And he said, he goes, I've got to try it. And I'm like, okay, but you know, those clips on the bottom of your shoes and everything. He flips off his shoes and everything. He's just like stocking feet. I get him up on top of the bike and everything. He rides it for, you know, like 150 feet. He goes, get me off this damn thing.
So that raises an interesting question for me, Daniel, because I've known you for a few years now. I've only ever encountered you on it. How do you actually get on it?
There's a step on the back of it.
Question.
You step up on it like a you get it rolling like a coaster bike, pushing off. Once it gets rolling, you hop up on top of it, sit down, take off pedaling. You don't have to worry about stopping because there's no brakes on it. You know.
Nope, that's not for me. No thanks. Mm-mm.
There's no brakes on it. How does one stop and dismount?
Your legs are everything on that bike. Your body is in control of the bike.
Okay.
Just like you play a guitar, and you are in control of the guitar.
Okay.
However fast you're going is how fast you're going. However slow you're going is how slow you're going. And, you know, when you're wanting to slow down, you slow down your pedaling, and you can get off of it at that time.
Wow. That sounds like a trip.
Nope.
That's going to be a no for me, Alex.
Or you can run it into something or something like that, or just, you know, like a flying dive.
Yeah, or you can crash.
Oh, yeah.
Just throw your weight to the side and just crash off to the side of it.
The thing is, yeah. I've seen him, like, he has lit by me to the point that he, like, caused wind. And I was like, man, he's moving. And now he's in here, like, he don't even have brakes. Like, I'm never going near you again, Dave.
Yeah.
Oh,
Lord.
What about the rest of you? What do the rest of you guys do?
Oh,
who's that?
Thomas?
Ladies first. Okay, I'll do it. Okay. I guess I'm a lady.
Yeah, you go first.
Tell them what I told you you are first, Thomas.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What did I tell you are?
I have to say it because Daniel's on the thing here. I am a director. I direct films. I write films. We just won best web series in Tokyo last month, and just, you know, anything I can do, like yourself, you know, like I, in comparison to the things you've accomplished, I have not accomplished anything. But I'm always wanting to champion someone forward. Like, I really want people to, like, love what they do and enjoy it. And so I made a film festival last year, or actually technically this year is when it happened. But I'm always trying to champion the artists and help people grow. And I love making film, telling stories. And if I ever, you know, could get my head straight, I would love to learn how to make music. But I can't. If I could make music just remotely as well as I can make a film, I would be very happy. But it baffles me because I love music, all kinds of music.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on the award, and that sounds great on the festival, man. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, I set out. I had a lot of guys, you know, locally where people were like, "Man, how much money did you make?" And I was like, "I didn't make a dime." I'm like, what? I'm like, I didn't start out to make money. So all the money that I made went to the venue for hosting us. I didn't make a dollar. Like, why'd you put in all this work? Because like, I literally love film more than I love breathing air. Like, it's
I hear you.
Like my kids in film are neck and neck with each other. Like, I've debated leaving my kids somewhere to go see a movie. I'm like, I could leave y'all at the park for a little while and go see a movie, but that's CBS gets called. That's terrible, so I can't do that. I love it. I love being around it. I love watching it happen. I don't know. It's like I can't get enough of it. It's really weird. Like, you know, I still buy physical copies of movies because I'm that weird guy, I guess. Most people I know are like, man, I just get on my Hulu and I roll with it. Like, I'll forget that. I want to see the full quality, whether it's a 1950 film or a 1930 film or, you know, 2019 film. I want to see it in its full glory. So
that's awesome.
Film, and that's what I love, man. And that's what I said, like, listening to you talk about music and how much you love it and getting around people and saying, okay, regardless, if you're teachable, it's just going to be harder. Like, I made me feel really good. Cause that's how I feel about film. Like, it is difficult at times, but there are way worse things in the world and way harder things in the world, but this is how you get started. You know, I really like that whole concept and approach.
Yeah, just leap in and go. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, but you only got to learn is, you know, you got to try. You know, you're going to fail. Mm-hmm. You're going to fail at some point. You have to fail.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, mm-hmm. Failure's how you learn more from failure than from success. So,
absolutely.
Well,
and how about you,
Thomas sent me his book originally and everything. And
We don't talk about that.
We don't talk about that, Thomas is a great screenwriter, and he is becoming great book writer because he has hooked himself up with other people in his area that write amazingly.
He is holding out, Thomas.
He shined brightly with Devil of the Lie. I'm like, whew, it's so good.
So, you know, but, you know, and sometimes you have to realize that part of it, too. I need other people to make my dreams come about.
Where is Holly?
Sure, absolutely.
And that's
what
Thomas does.
Take the village. Holly always says take the village.
Yeah.
Yes, the tribe, the village.
Tribe and the village, yes.
There you have it.
All right, Rebecca.
And what about you, Rebecca? What do you do?
I write books with zombies in them.
Books with zombies.
I have a strange obsession with the apocalypse of any sort, whether it's a zombie apocalypse or a biblical apocalypse or like a nuclear apocalypse. I don't know. The topic fascinates me. So right now I have the first of a series already on Amazon. I'm working on the sequel right now. I write under R.G. Westerman is my writer name.
Okay.
And I'm a full-time ghostwriter, and I have a very, very new, brand spanking new YouTube channel as well. So that's what
I
do.
Awesome. Awesome. I'd love to read it. Are you a child of the 80s or something with all those, because all those post-apocalyptic from Mad Max to,
very much, to
Waterworld.
Yep. Waterworld was a masterpiece. I don't care what anybody says.
Hey, like I totally agree. I did too. All I heard was it just panned and slammed and everybody beating up. I'm like, fuck you. That's one of the best movies ever.
No, it was great. It was like one of the most uniquely imagined apocalypse scenarios ever.
I will make the popcorn, and we all just need to sit down and watch that movie sometime.
Heck yeah.
That would be
And
deal.
Speaking
awesome.
Of apocalypse,
that'd be great.
Can I
go?
Just say
Where'd
real
go?
Quick how stoked I am for the new Terminator movie?
But what are they doing?
Yep.
Are you don't know? They're bringing back Linda
Sarah
Hamilton.
And John Connor are both back. That's what's important.
Oh,
that's what we all need
okay.
to know right now.
Yes.
I heard
Sarah
that.
Connor.
Yeah, I heard they were going to, but then I didn't hear anything else. I thought maybe it is
in the works. They've released a trailer. Oh my gosh. It took Linda Hamilton a year and a half to get back into Sarah Connor shape before they started filming.
Oh wow, that's awesome!
And they
that's awesome.
Edward Furlong.
No, like, I just
want to
cry.
Edward
I'm like,
oh my god, Arnold, call me! I want to do the soundtrack.
Right?
Have you done soundtracks before?
Oh my, yeah, I've done a little soundtrack. It was like small indie kind of things. I did some video game things that were smaller video games.
Oh wait,
kind of
hold
things,
on.
And
you,
that
said,
was,
see, you said indie and video game, two of my most favorite worlds. Give me some grabs here.
Oh my god! Well, see, I don't play. I don't have. You're gonna hate me now. I don't play, so I don't know. They just called me and said, "Can you do this music?" I would have to dig to find the name of the games that I worked on. One of them ended up being. It got downsized from like a computer thing. This is like all this was between, say, 1995 and maybe 2005, as late as that. Probably not as late as 2005. This earlier stuff. And one of them ended up being it got downsized to MIDI files so we could put it on phones, and then I had several others, you know, a couple of the smaller games that ended up like at, you know, Target and Walmart kind of stuff. They were never like huge, not Halo level kind of games at all.
Oh, that's fine. I played this game that only, like the first time it came out only had 50,000 copies released, and I still play it. So that's just who I am.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I did a couple.
So you did the original
score
for Qbert.
Awesome. I was going to say, I bet that was really funny, and it went right by me.
I have
Qbert
on the ColecoVision,
man.
I
play chess and Othello, and that's like the extent of my. Unless I'm in a pool.
Bro, I love Othello. Man, we got to get together for this like movie night, Othello night. Like
yeah, well you'll lose. I'm sorry. Like that's one of the I will crush all comers at Othello.
See, as soon as you said Othello, I was thinking like the Shakespeare play with Lawrence Fishburne in it.
No, that is atrocious. We're
Thomas,
talking about quality game.
I realize it's the game now, but you know.
It's like chess
I
or go or something like that. It's like pure binary
Thomas.
Logic.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm within driving distance.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you're only like 90 minutes away, you live in Lexington, right?
Yep.
I'm in Lexington. I'm in Lexington.
Oh my
Me
god!
Too.
Like, I literally could be at your guys' house in no time. I drive
yes!
a smart car.
Okay, we will do this. Yeah, we will do this.
That
was awesome.
Happen. We need to organize a giant Othello. Tournament
and Waterworld,
and we'd find out how many people in the state even played a game. All seven of us in the room, right?
That would be the total max.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Am I the only one that doesn't know what we're talking about right now?
Yeah,
are
I
you
think
so.
That's a brilliant game.
Yep. Uh-oh. Now we've all of a sudden got quiet.
Are we there?
Yeah.
I haven't played that game with anyone in years, and the fact that someone mentions it without me bringing it up
makes me a little excited. I'm sorry. I'm in my own little feeling. That,
well, there you go, man. We'll play some Othello. We'll watch some
Waterworld.
And I'll bring the popcorn and the black spice rum.
I'll bring the bourbon
and the ketchup.
I won't bring the ketchup.
No, okay.
No, that's Daniel. That's Daniel. Oh man,
I am game for this right now. You guys, I'm getting
man.
Like we're making it work.
Oh, this is awesome.
So you have to read my book before you can bring the ketchup.
Okay.
Which one?
Send me links to everyone's work. Because I'd love to see it. I'd love to see all that. And
sure.
One of the things that we're trying to do with the Lexington Music Awards is make it sort of a nodal point around which we can focus a lot on all the arts communities. One of the things I was very lucky is I met Ed Mackey, who's with the Lexington Fashion Collaborative, and Ed's really a lifesaver.
Yeah.
I mean, between Ed and Marcy Timmerman, they just saved me completely as far as the awards go, but the great thing is in addition to all the music that's going on, we've got like local or area, I mean, you know, across the state and whatnot, but we've got these designers who design and then make these dresses, and then we get these local models who all wear the clothes. So like if you are at the award show and all the presenter guides who come out, the models who come out with the presenters and whatnot, they're wearing locally made, locally designed clothing. So we're integrating fashion into what we're doing into the music thing. And then I want to keep that going where we bring in more and more of the arts. So we want to bring
awesome.
The fashion to a higher level, and we want to use it, like I said, as a nodal point to bring in all the other arts as well. We've already looked at, like, because the Lyric, where we have the show every year, has like basically an art gallery in the lobby area. So I'm hoping to work with them a little more closely to make sure we have local artists, you know, during showtime, basically, you know, if not the entire week or month. We want to bring in all the other arts too, so we definitely need to sit down and chat, you know, as far as like bringing in film photography and literature and find ways to bring all that together, because that's really what we're after with you know, the award show
Absolutely.
Is not just to honor music. It's primarily that, but it really, like I said, is a way to spin off into other things, which is how the LexiFest concert series came into being. It was as a spinoff, basically, to the awards. And we're having the next show, which is coming up at Proud Mary, the LexiFest festival that we do every year, once a year. We're about to knock out the fifth one of those, just like we finished the fifth award show. Labor Day weekend, so Sunday, September 1st at Proud Mary, and we'll have, I don't know, half a dozen or a dozen, I don't even know. My partner, Angeli Feltner, is booking the majority of the acts for that, and so and she's the lifesaver on that show, just as Marcy and Ed are on the other show. So there's so many people behind it. I really wish I had a list of the names of all the other people who are involved and who help, because that's not something that one person does. I mean, you know, as you did the film festival, you know, you don't do that by yourself. You know, you're a ringleader, but it takes so many people to make something like that happen for real. It's just impossible to even keep all the names in mind who help put all that together, from the, you know, from the people who make the physical awards to the photographers and the graphic designers and the, you know, everybody on board at the Lyric itself. I mean, you know, from the sound guys to security to the box office people, for that matter. I mean, there are just so many moving parts in an event like that. I always get a little skittish when someone goes, and he does the awards, as if I do it myself. You know, it's just like, no, I basically just like did the idea and, you know, leaped off the cliff with it. But it's all those other people who caught me so that I didn't just go crashing on the bottom. And part of the, you know, were also all the artists who got behind it and all the music fans who got behind it. You know, that's how that kind of thing works. Otherwise, it would have just been one of those things. People said, remember when that one guy tried that one thing and it sucked? You know, that would be the most it would ever be if it weren't for all the other people and all the good ideas we've had. I mean, people, when I'm doing interviews, give me credit for those. I'm like, actually, I didn't come up with that idea. I just opened the door and asked the public, you know, what are your ideas? Every bad idea that died was mine, and every good idea that's made the award show and LexiFest better were the ideas of everybody else. And if I was going to give myself any credit at all, it was just that I recognized it as a superior idea. So I put it in place. But most of those ideas are not mine. And it's people, you know, like I said, like Ed and Marcy and Angelina, who keep me straight and keep the thing moving, and you know, and then the press calls me and I'm the one who ends up looking good, but it really is not. It's not me at all. It's all those other people involved who make that stuff go.
Well, I've got a question for you. There is a I know there's probably a group that does just movie scores and stuff like that. If you're an independent movie person like Thomas, or if I decide to make a movie out of one of my books, where do you go to find those people?
To find people who do movie scores?
Yes.
Oh gosh, I would have no idea. I'm one of those people who does them, but I don't really run in those circles. I haven't done a film score in a decade, but it's damn fun work. You know,
I know them guys, Daniel, and a director.
It's,
wink, wink.
Yeah, I don't.
I was going to the movie or to the music guy, Tom. You know, I know that you've got your hands divvied out in 8,000 different places, but
yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I don't really solicit that kind of work because I'm so busy with other things. I love it when I get it. I have a blast doing that kind of thing. But I don't know. I certainly know there are groups, probably, you know, around that, you know, support groups and whatnot. And, but I don't know who they are or where they are. You know, mostly at this juncture in my career, my phone rings and someone says, do a jingle, or, you know, I need a theme for this thing, or I need a score. And I, you know, if I like the idea, I jump at it, you know, and if it pays well enough, I jump at it. And sometimes they don't pay well and I jump at it anyway, if it sounds fun and, you know, but I don't know where you would find people who do that. I mean, if someone asked me, I'd be a little, I don't know, call the one of the universities and see, you know, I mean, I really wouldn't know. I'm not sure who handles that. I'd probably call people like Dennis Daves at EKU Dr. Kevin Holm Hudson here at UK, or, you know, those guys are just brilliant guys and they know people, or Miles Osland or Raleigh Daly, or, you know, any of those guys who are just like off the charts good, you know, that's probably where I would start if it was a project I wasn't, you know, able or willing to do.
Okay.
All right. Well, David, is there anything that we have not covered yet on the show that you wanted to go over? Because I know you have a lot of activity. Want to make sure you get everything in you might want to talk about tonight.
Oh, I can never get it all in. I'm just having a blast chatting with you guys.
Awesome.
Yeah, we need to do one where there's a call in so people can ask, you know, they could ask questions or something, I guess.
Well, we will definitely will, yeah, because we just want, yeah, we had to cover you, and yeah, we'll have to do, yeah, just a call in show next. So, yeah, maybe that's a good idea, everyone. We'll do a part two to David M. McLean. It'll be a call in type show. But where can folks, we always give our guests a chance to say to the audience, especially new folks that are just discovering you now, where you want them to find you online, like, you know, social media, websites, that kind of thing, where to find you?
I'm all over. I'm easy to find. SkinnyDevil.net is my personal business website. You can Google the Lexington Music Awards, which is lexingtonmusicawards.org, SDMLguitar.com, or you can just Google, you know, SDML Guitar, Academy of Guitar. You can Google Skinny Devil magazine. All the articles and interviews and whatnot are there. You could. I just started a Twitter account. I don't know anything about Twitter, but I just started that, and I just started an Instagram account. I've been on Facebook for years.
What is your Twitter account? I will follow you right now. As a matter of fact, what is your Twitter account?
Man, yeah, like I don't know. I have no idea what it is. But I'm there. I just start like, I don't know. Send me links and I'll put stuff out. But no, I'm fairly easy to find. I mean, if you look David M. McLean up, or Skinny Devil Music Lab has a separate page on Facebook. SDML Academy of Guitar has a separate book. Skinny Devil Booking, you know, all that. Skinny Devil Magazine. Skinny Devil's kind of the head under which you can find everything. And then again, of course, there's things like Lexington Music Awards and LexiFest concert series. That's got a separate page on Facebook and Instagram and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, you can. Yeah, I'm pretty easy to find.
You reminded me of a question that I had earlier that I've got to ask now. There's got to be a story behind Skinny Devil.
I get asked that quite a bit. Yeah, yeah. Occasionally, yeah, and especially in the Bible Belt, I get hit with that upon occasion because occasionally it offends some people. Sure, yeah, yeah. Actually, it goes back to a joke. Back in, I'm trying to remember how long ago this was, but I flew out to California. A friend of mine who I'd played music with was getting married, and I was the best man at his wedding, and I flew out to California, and you know, it was a long flight, and then we had to drive around a bunch. And so I go back to the hotel, and I grab a shower, and I come out, and my buddies come back, and I'm standing there in a towel, and he just stops and looks at me and says, "Damn, you really are a skinny devil," and then went on, right? And then it kind of stuck a little. It was just sort of a joke. And then I was thinking in around 1998, 1999, you know, I need to come up with a name for the general business, an umbrella for all these different things that I do, because I went online with SkinnyDevil.com, which we don't have now. We've got SkinnyDevil.net, but we were going online in 1998 or 1999, and I needed a name that would make sense and sort of put it all together. And it just hit me, call it Skinny Devil, because it was funny and everybody got it, and so that's what we did. But that's where the name originally came from. So it just turned into Skinny Devil Music Lab. And from there it ended up being sort of a branding thing. Skinny, you know, they have Skinny Devil Booking and Skinny Devil Magazine and Skinny Devil Universe and, you know, Skinny Devil everything at that point. So, I'll know I made it when a local restaurant has the Skinny Devil, I don't know, something on the menu. When they name something after me, the Skinny Devil Burger, you know, the Skinny Devil salad, the Skinny, you know, I'll go, yeah, I made it. That was it. Look, Ma, no hands.
Nice. Oh, that's awesome. Well, David, it has been an awesome time tonight speaking with you, and I have really enjoyed it. And I know, everybody, I'm sure everybody else has. And
absolutely.
So, is there
definitely?
Yeah, is there anything else you'd like to mention? And beyond that, we'll wind it down here.
Oh no! Like I said, I'm never going to get to everything because I should always have a list when I do these things, but I like more having conversations, and it kind of goes where it goes, we'll have to do it again, and then we'll have a bunch more things to talk about. We'll go what we talked about that last time. Let's move on.
Yes, we will do that. Oh man, yes we will. I'm definitely going to get in touch with you, and I'm not joking. I want to do this Othello Waterworld extravaganza in Lexington at my house. We will do this, and Thomas, you can stay at the house.
So, now, yeah. what we got to do is we got to do it at Botany Bay. We got to do it at the new Botany Bay location because Jenny would think that's cool. I'm sure. I'm gonna speak for her, and she's gonna scold me if I'm wrong. She can hit me on social media and go, "I hate Othello," or "I hate Waterworld. Get out of my face." But
all right,
Bay, because they're moving their store. They were on New Circle, and they're moving over to Alexandria. And Jenny's just great. I've known her for years, and she's always been a great supporter of all manner of things. I mean, from music to like skateboarding. Like she helped sponsor the skateboard part, one of the skateboard parks, and Jenny's just amazing, and Botany Bay's awesome. So yeah, we'll have to call Jenny and say we want to come do like a Othello tournament and Waterworld watching right there at Botany Bay.
You got it, man.
She'll be like, "What's Waterworld?"
All right. Well, I'll just I'll sign off, and then you guys can all give your final statements. But next week at 9 p.m. Eastern, of course, is the regular time for the Star Chamber show, where it is a show by creatives for creatives. And this is Steven signing off. So take it on from here, everyone.
Thank you all so much.
Well,
it's
I've
been
had
a blast.
Thanks for having me on. I've had an absolute blast. It's been a super pleasure to talk to you, David.
Thank you so much. It's been so much fun talking to you guys.
Yeah, but I sent you a friend request on Facebook. It's an ugly blue and red profile picture, so you can't miss it.
Fantastic. Hey, and send me all your links, all your books and your film and everything
cool
you guys have. I'd love to check it all out.
Sounds good.
Very good. Yeah,
Take
I think
care.
I have you on Facebook too.
Awesome.
Well, until we get together next week, everybody have a creative week. See you then.
You got it. Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.